Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Susan Nylon. Susan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Richard.
Susan, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Oh, boy. I don't think you had that much time. Well, I think you're only curious about the latter years since we started to get to know each other. I was your typical working mother, ran a company, and a few years back saw a big change in the security of our future. Mm-hmm. And I was running a construction company in Florida, and one by one, I saw all the people that I had respected essentially go out of business like a house of cards. And this was around 2008.
Uh-huh.
And in addition to that, I have a young son at home who started at the age of 8 becoming very aware of the world around him.
Uh-huh.
And while I was basically trying to save my business, my son was coming home every day and letting me know what was happening outside of the small world that I had been existed in with. Not only his he was very concerned about the plight of the polar bear. He became very active in a group called Greenpeace. He became very aware of politics around him. And every day he would come home and we'd sit at the dinner table and I'd ask him how his day was and he just wanted to talk about issues. And
God and bless him.
I was like, here is an 8-year-old and I'm clueless and he knows more about things in the world around me. And, you know, I had been what I had thought was a quote-unquote activist in the sense, I call it an armchair activist, where
sure.
I'd get the emails and I'd like it or I'd respond it or I'd send off my email address in support of something. But that was essentially to the extent of it. But then at that point in time, I saw how passionate my son was and I thought, well, you know what? A good mother would indulge their son and get more involved with things of interest. And at that point, that's what he was interested in. So a chance meeting in a park one day with a young man who was actually a Greenpeace activist, started a conversation with my son. And before I knew it, my son was volunteering at Greenpeace, making phone calls to basically save the polar bear. And he worked on a campaign. And it was really sweet because he developed a great sense of pride and accomplishment. And then
super. God,
yeah.
Super.
And then at that time, it was also at the time of the elections, and I was a supporter of another candidate,
uh-huh.
But my son came home and said, you know, I really like this guy, Barack Obama, and I was like, well who's that? And I, you know, he every night would talk about it, and to the point where my husband and I said, my husband did the same thing. He said, yeah, I like him too. And at the same time, Joe Biden was coming to town, and I'm from that area.
Uh-huh.
I spent a lot of time in Delaware, and I've always admired him individually. And when I found out that he was coming to town, I thought, what a treat for my son to actually go to see a town hall.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled him out of school, took him there, and it was crowded. It was tons of people getting in line to get in. And while I'm standing in line to get in through the door, my son was running up to all the tables that they had out front and literally signing up to his name on everything, unbeknownst to me. And he went to the rally. He was very excited. He was like, it was like a rock concert for him.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed it. And then shortly thereafter, he started getting the phone calls. I'd like to speak to Mr. Nylon. I'd like to speak to Mr. Nylon. And I'm like, do you realize he's 8? And but I continued to indulge him a little bit more and started to become his driver.
Uh-huh.
And so he worked on several campaigns, believe it or not, at that point in time, putting out signs,
yep.
Door knocking, the whole bit. And eventually what happened is his responsibility came so great that because he's in school, I ended up also taking it. And that's
okay.
When I got started to say, you know what, enough. And one of the things I tease with my husband all the time, because I'm in my mid-40s, and I tease in front of him, and I say, yeah, most people, when they go through a midlife crisis, they buy a car or have an affair. I got involved in politics. And I became so vocal that my husband said, enough. I don't want to have another conversation about it. I don't want to hear about it. So by doing that, I started to write, because that was my way to basically communicate without driving my husband nuts. And that kind of led into, you know, I took a job as a journalist and, you know, started to write on the internet and just became very active. And one of the things that I learned is that you can't just spout an opinion. It has to be grounded in facts. And the more I started...
Well, it's because you're not a Republican.
Well, I'm not so quick to say, you know, Democrat, Republican, Independent, or anything like that, because I when I have a conversation with somebody and I sit down face to face and we talk about the issues, I generally find that there's some common ground, and this is my biggest frustration with our politicians who just want to win a race. They just want to get a vote, and they'll say whatever it takes to the person who's listening to say, yeah, I'm one of you. And the truth of the matter is that people who fall into that and believe that don't really spend any time finding out what the real issues are. They don't invest in getting to know the truth or the facts. And, you know, we had talked about before we went on air, you know, what is my one thing? What is my purpose? And initially, I spent a lot of time pushing renewable energy in the state of Florida because I thought the construction industry was so far gone that I thought, well, this is a great industry to segue into it.
Sure.
And so I spent a lot of time in Tallahassee talking to the politicians, working on pieces of legislation. I did a little bit of work with the EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund. I did a little work locally with communities that focused on making Sarasota a renewable energy community. But I realized that it wasn't enough. A lot of times I go up to Tallahassee and I find that instead of just talking about an issue that the congressman or the senator was going to vote on the next morning, I spent most of my time explaining to them what the issue was. In fact, I even had one senator who came up to me the next morning after our meeting because she was voting on a piece of legislation that I was asking her to take a look at. And she came running up and she said, oh, thank God I ran into you last night. I had no idea what that was about and I just cast my vote. And my mouth just dropped open because I'm like, it's your responsibility to know what you're voting on. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, and I'm not going to totally bash everybody in Tallahassee, but they're not that invested in it either. And so they rely on their legislative aides. You have to educate the legislative aides. You have to educate the public. So if you ask me what my goal is, my goal is to educate, to get the facts out there and let the person on the receiving end of those facts decide for themselves. Because I just think that, you know, we make quick snap decisions on things that just aren't true or aren't realistic.
Well, you know, you bring up so many different topics that are so critical, and I want to share two very brief anecdotes with you to show, I think, a commonality of spirit. When my son, who's now in his mid-30s and a law enforcement officer in the West, he was in middle school and heard a presentation by Greenpeace on the devastating deforestation of South America, in Brazil in particular. Mm-hmm. And then the teacher, without really preparing the students on how to write a letter to a public body, asked the kids to write their reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my son, being the passionate young man that he was, much like your own son, wrote a letter saying, you know, this is incredibly thoughtless. And a disaster for not just Brazil, but for the planet at large.
Wow.
Respiration is so important. The processing of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide mm-hmm. into oxygen is so critical for the life forces of the planet. And he signed it, Your Enemy, Ocean.
Oh.
And the way I found out about this was I got a call from a teacher saying that my son has written an incredibly terrible letter. And the teacher was requesting a conference for us to discuss this. So I thought, you know, this is so unusual because my son mm-hmm. is very reticent and shy and nothing like his father in that sense. He's not an outspoken young man at all. So I was really taken aback. I mean, what could he have written mm-hmm. that would have somehow impressed the teacher this way? I go in to talk to her and she, you know, she hands me this letter. And, you know, since I agree that the devastation done by casual lumbering, especially in the Brazilian rainforest, mm-hmm. is terrible.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, I said, let me ask you a question. Did you discuss with the students how to write a letter to the UN? Did you discuss, you know, anything about how to address a public body like that, or did you just say, okay, now that you're angry, please write something?
Mm-hmm.
And she admitted that, well, yeah, you know, they heard the speech and she asked them to write something. And I said, well, you know, you're talking to 12-year-olds and 11-year-olds. You know, these are young students who, they speak their mind plainly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know the artifice
or the a finesse.
either way, I'll go with your word.
well,
to write this in a more professional, sure, business-like manner. So I said, you know, I can't understand why you're surprised at this, because I'm sure that there's some passion leaking through several of the letters of young people. Now, maybe,
sure,
my son's use of your enemy.
I think it's great. I mean, that's the one thing that I'm always concerned about, is that we as parents are always trying to stifle our kids with the intent of not offending anyone. But we go to such an extreme that we also inhibit them in their way to actually communicate something that will amount to something.
Well, needless to say, I backed him up 100%.
Well, good for you.
The other point that I wanted to make to you, mm-hmm, my friend Susan, is that many of us who've been around these battles for decades, I'm approaching my sixth decade, and many of us are are more than you might imagine concerned that there's not enough 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds out there.
Oh, absolutely.
Although we all know why that is, because they're making their initial foray into the world. They're trying to establish themselves. They're maybe starting young families. Mm-hmm. So that it's all, you know, part of the normal human condition that,
sure,
20 and 30-year-olds are busy trying to start a life, and they're not as active typically as people in their 40s and 50s and 60s. And so that's all very normal. But when I heard your story about how you helped your son utilize that enthusiasm, that energy, that drive, mm-hmm, that sense that we are on this planet together, that unless we help each other, unless we help the planet, there's, mm-hmm, not going to be a planet left.
Correct.
And I absolutely support you. And, you know, when many of us older activists talk with, you know, all right, what are you doing to bring younger people in? Well, Susan, you've covered your base.
Well, I thank you. I do want to stop you there and say one thing, though. See, I don't view it that way. I actually think that my son helped me. I mean, he reminded me.
Well, he got you motivated. So
he brought to light how little I was involved and how quick I was to just write something off. Now, of course, I will bring it around, because now my son's 13, and to get him active and passionate outside of his computer games, I'm like, what happened to the little boy? So, you know, there is an ebb and a flow. I get it now that I'm actually really ingrained in the political process, and I say, oh, you want to do this? Oh, you want to go there? He's like, no, Mom, I'm good. And I'm like, what? So I'm now pulling him back into it. But I agree with you. I think that it's a cliche, but it's a true cliche, that if we don't inspire and educate the younger generation, you know, we are going to be a dying species, and that to me is paramount.
Well, it's always important to me as a journalist to help people understand. The ancients used to basically focus very much on character development by telling the stories of those who were noble,
mm-hmm,
of those who evinced the highest societal standards. When I invite guests who are activists, I want people to understand what took them from being just another consumer, minding their own business, trying to live a life, trying, mm-hmm, to support their family, because God knows that's hard enough. That is hard enough and literally takes more time than most people have in a day just to,
yes,
take care of that.
Oh, absolutely.
So I have to have just so much respect for people who, in addition to trying to live a good life, mm-hmm, in addition to trying to take care of their family, invest time and energy and attention to trying to help out the world. So I think that's invaluable, and I thank you so much for sharing that part of your story.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you about some of the contemporary issues that that fill the Facebook lines,
oh,
and,
yeah,
and help them sell their ads, and of course that amaze so many of us day by day. Now, I have been a practicing human now for these 50 plus years, and, mm-hmm, and in many of those years, I have had, let's say, a sexual thought or two, as have, uh-huh, most people. Now, I find the fact that the current Republicans want to refight the battle from the last century of whether humans should have access to birth control, I find that absolutely amazing, and am puzzled beyond words as to why they think this is a good strategy.
It's a terrible strategy, and it's a strategy that is backfiring on them. But it's not something that is new. I mean, for as long as I can remember, especially within the state of Florida, they've always been fighting this battle. I think the difference between years ago and now is that there's a lot more people that think like that, that this is the strategy, this is what's going to separate us from them, this is what's going to bring our base in. I think, you know, a few decades ago, when the Christian right kind of took over the Republican Party, they decided that's what their calling was. That's the true direction of the party. And unfortunately, as you see right now, it's a very torn party. I mean, you know, I have the majority of my family are Republicans. And I could say when I have a and I don't really talk politics too much with my family.
Sure.
They usually avoid me like the plague because they know that it's not an easy win if they take me on. So we don't talk about it. But I do ask them, how do they feel about this? And there's not one of them right now that is confident in the direction of where they're going as a party. And on top of it, we've seen it over in the past couple months, a difference in people who – and I don't think this is necessarily party related, because I've been very big on Facebook right now pushing the fact that this is not a Republican issue, this is not a liberal issue or a Democratic issue, this is an issue for women. And I have to tell you, my entire life I've been fighting the issues of equality for women, which is why I'm so passionate about the equality for the LGBT community, because I can relate to that. From a very early age on, I discovered that there's not only an inequality, but an acceptable inequality. You know, I worked in radio when I first started out after college, and I was probably a lone girl in a sea of man's world. Then I went into construction for a while, and same scenario there. Fortunately, I've learned how to curse like the best of them. But the point is that this movement right now extends beyond politics. I think women are just tired. They're just feeling enough. And I think what's happened is the majority of us have all reached the same age, just like myself, and said, you know what? I'm tired of sitting by and letting somebody else do it for me. I'm not going to take it anymore. And that's what I think you're seeing with Rush Limbaugh. You're seeing that with our state politicians. You're seeing that at the federal level. Women are just reaching out. The Susan G. Komen fiasco, we said enough. It's not about politics. It's about our health care. It's about our life.